peace, quiet, and good order will be maintained in our city to the best of our ability. Riots, melees, and disturbances of the peace are against the interest of all our people, and therefore cannot be permitted.
The jury found that they were all not guilty, not guilty, not guilty,
We've been
not
told
guilty,
that all
not
along
guilty.
Crenshaw Boulevard, that there's a series of fires, a lot of looting is going on, a disaster area, obviously.
The jury found that they were all not guilty, not
Make
guilty.
Make it rough.
Not guilty.
Make it rough. Yo, Lugs, make it rough.
Okay. If you are listening to this, if you are hearing my voice right now on this broadcast, then congratulations. You are in the 5%. You've made it into the Chapo Grey Wolves inner circle. You are our elite crack unit of subscribers. And we are now bringing you the first ever Chapo Trap House premium content. Your trillion years of servitude aboard Chapo Sea Org begins now. You are, I think there are 261 of you. That's fucking awesome. More will join your ranks. I'm hoping for, you know, out of the 12 tribes, 144,000 are chosen. And they will eventually be you, but you've gotten in on the ground floor here of this excellent premium content, this bonus show that we're recording for you.
When Almighty returns to Earth and he calls the righteous and the wicked to account for their misdeeds, and Elijah comes in on his flaming chair, casts aside the evildoers, the only people who will be safe will be you, the premium listeners.
Your names have been inscribed in the Book of Life.
You are sitting at the right hand of Chapo, and you are the originals. So first off, we want to thank you for choosing to kick in a little bit of your hard earned money to the Chapo Society for the Betterment of Justice and Development, and getting this excellent premium content where we will now read from my dream journal for the next 30 minutes or so. So hope you strap in. Hope you guys are ready. We're obviously going to continue destroying. And I think the topic of this first premium bonus show will be sort of a follow-up on what we talked about on last week. And what we want to do here is follow up on a few points that have happened since we recorded episode 11 with Matt Taibbi about some more of the fallout of the Brunig, l'affaire Brunig, the Brunig supremacy, because obviously it's still percolating and there's still some things going on. What do you say?
Let's do it. We have a big fat duck for you guys.
I mean, like, I think the show is just like, it's just one long duck hunt, really, and one duck in particular. And we're going to get to him, but I want to start off by reading something that came out just this week that I thought was excellent. It's by Sam Chris, and it's In Defense of Personal Attacks. Woo-hoo! And I just want to read this other thing because, yeah, he nails it. He says, debate club rules are not universally applicable. When people demand that discourse only take place on the level of ideas rather than ugly reality, it's often because there is something in reality they'd rather not face. The people who really object on principle to being mocked or insulted, the ones who decry it as violence, tend to be far less critical of actual, physical, deadly violence. Blood is fine, dick jokes are not.
Oh, that doesn't sound familiar at all. What?
Yeah.
No, he nailed everything that happened this week in that one paragraph. But he goes on into some of the specifics that we're going to talk about right now. He says, what unites the liberals attempting to demonize Brunig? Sadie Doyle, Joshua Faust, Jordan Kay, and others you're probably very lucky to have never heard of, is their total uselessness at good, vicious political invective. It's just not their natural terrain. They like to condemn groups and caricatures, slinging their mud out of a bucket from on high where they never get dirty themselves. They're incapable of getting a decent playground insult to land on any one individual. The other option besides violence is to whine that you're being mean. And then she goes, case in point is Doyle, who once wrote that, quote, trying to parse Hillary Clinton without also parsing Hillary hate is like trying to drink water without touching the glass, apparently never having heard of the popular invention known as the straw.
My straw reaches across the room and starts to drink your milkshake. I drink your milkshake.
Now, he mentions three people at the top. Jordan Kay is that gormless-faced, sad-looking moron. Silicone Jim. I'm sure you see his sad-looking face.
He's the guy who
pop up
he's
on
inventing a app that helps you hack your Wii so you can fuck Wario.
And Sadie Doyle, probably the less said about her is the better. She's a genuine basket case. These people are irrelevant, but the person I wanted that we're going to talk about is this guy Joshua Faust, because like he has exited the orbit of just like lame Twitter dipshit into a world of actual evil, and like he very much is. And what he did this week, and again, I don't want to get into specifics, you can find out for yourself, but he took it upon himself before fucking shuttering his account like a fucking coward to really try hard to fuck with the livelihoods of Matt and Liz, because he was apparently so offended and so shocked by what they did. But this guy has no fucking conscience. And okay, so like, if you can, like, how best to describe who Joshua Faust is and what
Joshua
is.
Joshua Faust, he grew up getting bullied, getting his nose broken in school, getting laughed at. He talks about this on his personal blog. He talks about how he wants to be an evil genius. He talks about how he fantasized shooting up his own school. Joshua Faust will tell you that he made good by his career, that he took all these dark thoughts and turned them into a life of success, when really all he's done in his career is whitewash for genocidal madmen and defense contractors. He never had the fucking nuts to kill anybody himself, but if you kill somebody and you have a check that can, you have direct deposit, Josh will fucking lap up your mess.
Like, if you can imagine the city of Washington, D.C. as like a giant whale that has died and sunk to the bottom of the ocean, Joshua Faust and those like him are like the sort of colorless blind crabs and hagfish that are just writhing and coursing through its leviathan corpse, just like slowly stripping it bare. Like, that's what Joshua Faust does for a living. He is basically the last, like, or second to last link in like a massive human centipede that begins with like Defense Department contractors and their Central Asian clients, like the sort of despotic rulers of Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. Like, Joshua Faust is paid by these people to attack their critics. And that's not an exaggeration.
No, yeah, this is exactly what he does. But he's also shitty at it. These dictators, they're not getting their fucking money's worth. I don't know how you become a Joshua Faust. Maybe you act as Frank Carlucci's human footstool for 2 years.
Like,
maybe you clean the gunk out of fucking Ted Shackley's mouth. But this is just, this guy is incompetent, lowest of
like
low.
He's a bad writer. He has a totally banal person whose like one ability is that he's like completely surgically removed his like conscience or like whatever remnant of a soul he once had. Like, and this is the thing, like, we like, this is well known among certain people. Like, I mean, there's a fucking dossier on this guy that what he does is he pitches himself to outlets like The Atlantic or even like The Daily Beast or like, or anyone who will have him, and like he'll pitch like pieces to them like, you know, about an issue or criticizing someone. But what he doesn't do is that he pitches himself to media outlets to write about a topic, but then never discloses that he is also being paid by the very people he's writing about, like including the government of Uzbekistan or various, Defense Department contractors. Like, for instance, a couple years, like back in 2010 or whatever, the Washington Post did this huge investigative series about this kind of like the whole network of the defense contractor industry. And he wrote a critique of that piece for the Columbia Journalism Review that they had to run a correction on because he never disclosed the fact that he works for Northrop Grumman at the time. And the whole point of his critique of this the investigative expose was that, oh, well, you know, it's really not telling us anything we don't already know. And like, this is very much how he operates, where like he'll write a piece in The Atlantic about human rights abuses in these Central Asian countries. And it's like he's sort of half smart. So what he'll do is he'll criticize like the government of Uzbekistan on something that's irrelevant to them, but he'll direct most of his ire at the people who are criticizing them. So it's always this setup of like, he'll be like, well, now, of course, it's bad to boil people alive. But really, you know, a labor strike, I think people in the West are making too big of a deal about this. And this is an article he wrote about an oil strike that was going on in Uzbekistan, where I think about a month after he wrote this piece in The Atlantic, the very government he works for massacred 70 people, at least 70 people. Like this is who this guy is, and that like he was so shocked by what Matt said to Neera Tanden.
We make fun of the phrase "you prove my point" a lot, but I honestly think that the whole Josh Faust play in however many acts it was mostly took place yesterday proves the entire thesis that we've been and people on this side of this contrempt have been making. You've got a guy in Faust who does actual evil in the world in terms of propagandizing for warmongers and dictators. His evil is sort of sublimated by politesse and professional courtesy. This guy gets outraged by Matt Bruning saying scumbag to someone who he feels deserves better deference. And then he goes on a jihad of trying to get these people to basically be totally impoverished. He wants their lives to be ruined for this tweet. And then everybody tells him he's a scumbag and he closes his Twitter. Now, there's two sides to that. There's his side where I stood up for this for against abuse and they proved my point by attacking me in a coordinated effort. That's what he's thinking. But I hope that any reasonable observer could say the guy who is a piece of shit propagandist for murder and then does the actual real-world step of trying to get people fired, and then, totally unsurprisingly, has a bunch of different people without any needed coordination telling him he's a piece of shit, that is the guy who's actually materially being a scumbag in the world. It's not the guy who had a tweet that is considered intemperate.
And like this is sort of like similar to what we were talking about with Derek about the David Samuelson guy, where he like, you know, presents as kind of like, you know, a normal, like, sort of liberal media guy, but yet he's like doing these like panels at like these blood soaked think tanks about how we need, and like, they're allowed to function in that regard because like they always sort of set it up like it's a matter of liberal concern. And this is what Josh Faust does with Matt Bruning, and it's what he does with like the invasion of Iraq. He'll like, with Matt, he'll be like, this guy harasses women, I'm standing up for women. Or if it's like the United States wants to invade a country, he'll just be like, since when did liberals like not believe in liberating people or like liberating women or something like that? So that's how he gets in the pages of like the Daily Beast or the Washington or the Columbia Journalism Review or the Atlantic or whoever else is fucking lazy and unscrupulous enough to fucking actually publish this.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's about one step above the young cons, the fucking tall rap conservative guys who look like they have Marfan syndrome, where they're like, they'll post a meme where they'll be like, liberals say they respect women, but they don't want them to have guns. Think about it. What Faust does is just a longer version of that when it comes to wars.
Yeah. And like, you know, it's just like, keep this in mind. Like, I think he's very instructive to how this whole field of, like I said, hagfish and the quote strategic communications industry really works. Is that, like, they'll always concede one point, but you should always be wary of the one they're not conceding, because that's where their interests really lie. And you can see that, like I said, in his coverage of Central Asia or the war in Iraq or whatever. But here's another thing about also how this thing works, and about how these people use, like, identity politics to get away with this kind of shit. I found an article he wrote in Foreign Policy magazine this week. It wasn't published this week. It was from 2015. And the title of the article is What It's Like to Be Gay in the Ultra-Masculine NatSec Community. And then the subheadline is, Even post Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it's still a world of homophobic slurs and awkward questions about my wife. Now, I don't want to read too much
for it.
talk about Kazakhstan, Jesus. I just want to read the beginning of this article. Just like, try to imagine this scene that he's painting here. So he says, a few months ago, I was at one of those boozy early evening events that bind together professional life in Washington, D.C.
Oh, I wish it ended like Chappaquiddick.
I was there to meet a retired White House official who was holding court off to the side of the party, and after offering a few remarks to the gathered crowd about his career working in national security policy. Like, okay, you could say nothing further. This already sounds like my vision of what hell is like, being at this fucking function. But he goes on. He says, when it was my turn to shake his hand, his eyes darted to the wedding ring on my left hand. It's great to meet you, he said. Is your wife around? It was a simple question, one that most people would not think twice about. But for me, it brought up a familiar discomfort. I stuttered for a few seconds, then corrected him. My husband isn't here. He's away on a work trip. The senior official batted an eye, hesitated for the briefest of moments, and said, That's great, before moving on to meet other people at the party. He never made eye contact with me again for the remainder of the party. Now, I imagine that he's probably talking about, like, fucking Donald Rumsfeld or something right here, and the event he's at is, like, you know, the annual gala fundraiser for, you know, fuck, what's that Iranian terrorist group?
MEK. They were the MEK holiday mixer.
They're at the Team B trust fall session.
They're at the Jundala fucking jungle juice bash.
Like, he's at this horrible fucking party to, like, waiting to kiss the ass of, like, Paul Wolfowitz or something, and experiences, like, a half second of, like, mild homophobia or just social awkwardness. And, like, and now he, and this is his cross to bear, and we're supposed to, like, feel bad for him.
Yeah. So, you know, Nazi, he's a great guy and all, but he's, you know, he's an older man, and he tried to gift me a village girl. And as I was looking at that dissident being lowered into a boiling barrel of oil, screaming alive, I couldn't help but relate to him because I felt uncomfortable. Thanks, Josh. Fuck yourself.
So, yeah, I think we can close the file on Josh Faust.
Fuck off.
I mean, he's just a
piece of shit.
Fuck yourself forever. Disappear forever.
Yeah, go fuck yourself forever.
Don't log back on. He's going to try to do it. You just know he's going to wait a week. No, fuck you. Hammer him into a
move to a mountain where no one will talk to you.
By the way, if you ever see his byline in any fucking news or media outlet, write them off entirely, because you know exactly how little they give a shit about their readers. Do you want to talk about that comic book movie asshole?
Oh, God.
Matt, what's this guy's name?
I'm so pleased about this, because I've been horrified by this fat idiot nerd for years now, And now, because he's been a vocal Hillary shithead online, people are in the wider circle that I associate with online are like, who is this asshole? And I'm like, that's Devin Faraci. Devin Faraci is the proprietor of a website that is mostly it mostly exists to provide free PR for Marvel movies and the Disney company in general. And they will tell you that they're not being paid to do it and that they just love those Marvel movies that much. But honestly, I would respect him way more if he was being paid, because a grown-ass man who's in his 40s loving this mediocre bullshit as much as he does is just deeply saddening.
Oh, yeah, no, I was going to ask, is he in his 40s?
He's 45 years old.
He looks fucking terrible.
He looks 60.
He looks fucking off. Dude, I know we tell you people this all the time, but Google image search Devin Faraci. This motherfucker looks like he abducts people and plays Yo La Tengo records for them.
So I wanted to read this. Post-punk kidnapper. Yeah. This is the first paragraph of his Captain America Civil War review. And this is a movie that I'm sure most of the people listening have probably seen by now, and that most people listening to have probably already forgotten literally everything about by now. Because it's just like every other Marvel movie. It is an enjoyable but bland thing. It looks like it was shot on VHS camcorders. It looks like it was shot in an abandoned mall. There's some good fight scenes, and you're done. But this is his review of this movie. Remember, 45 years old. Captain America: Civil War isn't just a great Marvel movie. It's a great movie. And that greatness, which is dependent in part on the groundwork laid by 12 previous movies, is the final proof of the concept that Marvel Studios first tried out in Iron Man back in 2008. It's the film that proves the shared universe concept isn't just cool and isn't just a great marketing idea, but that, when used right, it creates a kind of gripping, resonant, long-form storytelling that no one else has ever accomplished on this scale. Civil War isn't great despite being the third Captain America and 13th overall Marvel movie. It's great because of those things.
No, he told someone to get her, someone who was criticizing him to, quote, get a real job. Like, this guy's real job is writing, like, fanfic movie reviews.
But
here's the other thing.
Yeah, what was that?
And this goes back to his fucking, his hideous appearance. The other thing that I saw that was actually nauseated me more than anything is this old clip of him. It's this video that he took of himself, and he's in a fast food restaurant, right? And he's got the camera, like, pointed around at his face. So half of it is you can see his horrible face, which, like, I would describe as, like, it's like if a child grew like a Steve Earle style beard and hair. Like, that's what it looks like. And he's got bad teeth. And like, he's, like I said, like a 45-year-old man with this big gray beard.
Gandalf that, like, the is Blight. Dressing,
yeah, is dressing like a teenager. Like, he's got like a hoodie and some dumb comic t-shirt on and a stupid baseball hat. And like, half of the frame is taken up with his dumb grinning face. But what he's filming is like right over his shoulder. Is this guy in the fucking Burger King or wherever he is, like in the back booth, just nodding out on heroin? And it's just like, okay, like, I've seen shit like that. My immediate instinct is not to just start filming it, but he's snickering the entire time. Like, it's just his ugly face just snickering at this dude, like, falling out on smack or whatever. And it was like, it really turned my stomach.
There's one thing that I wanted to point out about this gentleman. That is one of my favorite things about him that we haven't talked about before, and that is that he once wrote an article about how the relationship between Iron Man and Captain America mirrored the relationship between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton in the hip-hop musical that we all know and love, Hamilton.
Okay, I don't want to even think about this guy anymore. I can't take it.
It's a dark world. The Hakani Network.
It's Thor 2, the dark world, when we think about this guy.
Just, oh God, imagine writing about Captain America Civil War like it's fucking Chinatown or something. Like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Forget it, Jake. It's Underworld.
Okay, so I think we have one more thing I think we should talk about on unrelated to the Brunig supremacy is we're coming up on Memorial Day weekend. So I think we should talk about Chris Kyle.
American Hero.
I mean, if there's one, like honestly, if there's one thing, like, Chapo is all about, like, what we love is Chris Kyle, American Sniper. Yep. We love everything about American Sniper, the movie, American Sniper, the book, American Sniper, the actual slightly deranged human being.
I like
love the deranged human being.
We actually like him the most.
He's the best part.
R.I.P.
I carry out my day. I snipe all of my problems.
No, we regret... Honestly, I regret every duck that we let fly away on this show. And I look up to Chris Kyle. And again, it's fitting that he's back in the news coming up on Memorial Day. But he was back because there was a couple of pieces out this week. First in The Intercept about how it's been like a well-known fact for some time that in his book and sort of post celebrity career, he sort of like inflated the number of he inflated his valor by about a factor of one or two. Like he and this is what's so weird about it is that, like, when I read the piece, I was kind of like, huh, like that's it. But like, it's just such an odd thing. Like, he in the book and his subsequent appearances, he said he had something like 6 bronze stars and like 2 silver stars for valor. But like, his official military record says he has like one of each or something like that. He just sort of like doubled all the number of medals he had.
I'm seeing double here. Like,
why would you even
4
lie about
bronze
that?
Bronze stars.
It's just like a thing. Like, if you had like 3 bronze stars.
Well,
said why would you tell people that you had 6?
Because he also said that he was on the top of the Superdome during Hurricane Katrina shooting looters. And he told people that he shot 2 carjackers in Colorado and then they covered it up because he was so cool. He was a compulsive bullshitting psycho. It's like he could not lie.
That's what makes him so fucking cool.
Oh, it's fascinating.
He's the kid who's like, yeah, my uncle works at Nintendo, and he doesn't, but his other uncle actually does work at the WWE. Like, dude, he has all the trappings of every fucking crank internet poster who's like, yeah, you know, I was in the secret activities force. I used my gun to shoot a terrorist. And it's like, he has the same bullshit lying, but he actually, like, did some of it, which, like, makes it... That's fucking awesome.
That's what's so poignant about it, and that's why American Sniper, the movie, not only is it a piece of shit, but it's such a hugely missed opportunity, because... So, Chris Kyle is, like, the apex of masculinity. There's a lot of men in America who have a crisis in themselves of feeling like they're not man enough, look up to. Like, he's the guy that kind of encapsulates an American masculinity that they aspire to, but know in their hearts they don't actually meet, and therefore causes them anxiety and, you know, stress. And then we find out that even he has that same sort of, like, constant need to ratify his masculinity to the point that even though he did kill 1 million Hajis in Iraq, he had to come back and make up a bunch of other people he shot because it would never be enough. It's like, it's the logic of capitalism.
He's like, you know what will really endear people to me? Yeah. Is that, like, if I just tell people that I fucking blew the brains out from the top of the Superdome, like 20 people in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Like, what the fuck? Like,
but it's just, it shows that that logic of capitalism also applies to masculinity at this point. We've commodified it to the point where it's a unquenchable hole that you just have to keep filling, and if you don't have enough material, you'll make it up, even if you're
it's like the alpha of alphas. Yeah, it's like, for the guy who has all the valor in the world, like, what do you need? More valor.
He's got to siphon off a little valor.
Yeah.
Everyone wants a little more valor. I think that's a good place to wrap things up for this first of our premium episode. So, first of all, I want to thank, again, everyone who's listening to this, because if you are listening to this, it's because you've given us money and you've kept our families together, at least for this month. But what I want to implore you all to do is, like, now that we have this dope secret premium content, like, when you get this, I want you to, like take screenshots of your phone, like, playing it. Talk about it, like, just lie, even if you don't like it. Just be like, oh my god, it's so much more next level than the free podcast. You can't even believe the shit they're saying. Just like, we want all the fiends out there just itching for that next fix of Chapo. So if you can just let the people who are still freeloaders who haven't joined the Grey Wolf Sea Org yet, let them know that, you know, there's still room on the ship. We want them in the inner circle. We want you in the 5%.
Let me go a little bit higher. If you are married and your spouse does not also support the podcast, forbid them from listening to the premium content.
Oh my God, I can't believe we didn't say that immediately. Yeah. No, if you were a subscriber and you let someone who's not a subscriber listen to this show, like,
you might as well be the traitor Gulan, like, frankly.
Yeah, that is some Gulan shit.
Worse than Gulan.
That is even worse than Gulan.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that is like the most suppressive act that you could possibly do to Chapo.org. This premium episode, I think we're gonna like do these. I mean, obviously we're gonna keep firing them as long as people are still feeling it and still subscribing to the show. So like they're just gonna be kind of like shorter mini shows. We're gonna do more duck hunts, more readings. And I think, you know, this first one was just one big duck hunt with three ducks. They are, of course, just soulless fucking hagfish, Joshua Faust. Devin Faraci, is that his name? Just unbearable fucking comic nerd.
Yeah.
And last but not least, just anyone who has slandered the memory of Chris Kyle or said that he is anything less than just the greatest American hero ever. That's the biggest duck of all. And you know, yeah.
How
exactly.
Fucking dare you?
How dare you, sir? So
I hear motherfuckers saying that Simo Haina from Finland is a better sniper than him, and I'm like, fuck you.
Until the next episode, until the next free episode, and then you in the inner circle, until the next premium episode. Thanks for listening, and thanks for paying.
Yes, thank you a lot.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Not guilty, the filthy devils try to kill me. When the news get to the hood, the niggas will be hotter than cayenne pepper. Cuss, bust, kicking up dust is a must. I can't trust a cracker in a blue uniform. Stick a nigga like a unicorn. Born wicked, Lawrence Powell, foul. Cut his fucking throat and I smile. Go to Simi Valley and surely somebody knows the address of the jewelry. Pay a little visit, who is it? Can I talk to the grand wizard? Then boom, make him eat the barrel. Modern day Pharaoh, now he's zipped up like leather Tuscadero. Pretty soon we'll catch Sergeant Coon. Shoot him in the face, run up in him with a broom. Stick, prick, devils ain't shit. Introduce his ass to the AK-40 dick. 2 days, niggas laid in a cut. To get some respect, we had to tear this motherfucker up.